We're back. We back. Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast, everyone. Thanks for tapping in this week. It's the last pod before the trade deadline. The next pod would be next Friday. The trade deadline is Wednesday, and nothing has happened. And I feel like we could be leading to a very boring trade deadline. I don't know. I feel like I've talked about this a lot. There's just a lot of teams in it, a lot of teams incentivized not to throw it all away and sell, and not a lot of teams that might not want to go all in. I don't know. We'll see. I'm hoping it'll be an exciting one. I hope specifically the Seattle Mariners will do something. I'm sure they will. We've talked about the big offseason or the big deadline acquisition of Mark Canada that's coming. We know it's coming, Jerry. All right, you can just do it now. But this episode, I have one very fun comp for the 2024 Seattle Mariners that I'll get into in a second, and then I'm just going to kind of riff on the state of things and end this one. But I was looking for a good comparison for the current Seattle Mariners in 2024 and where they find themselves right now, where you feel like there needs to be internal improvement, but also they probably need to be fairly aggressive at the deadline. They've built this elite pitching staff that you just can't waste. The pitching staffs like this do not come often. And the fact that right now they're all healthy, knock on wood, they'll be healthy the rest of the season for the most part. You just can't take this for granted, especially in this day and age. You can't go into this offseason trying to reload and just taking it like, oh, we're just going to have these five guys again next season all year. We've seen how many injuries happened this season already. You just can't bank on that being a thing every season. And the fact that we've seen how good this staff is this year, I don't even think we've seen the best out of George Kirby. Brian Wu has not been healthy most of the year. Like, Luis Castillo has been great. Logan Gilbert has been awesome, has been Cy Young level. You just can't waste it. And so I was looking for a team that was in a similar position at the deadline where they had a good pitching staff. Maybe they needed to get a bat and at the same time just at home, they needed some improvements. Maybe they were banking on a prospect call-up, really sparking something in the team going forward in August and September. And I found a really good comp, recent comp as well. I was thinking recent in my lifetime. I found a really good one. And I don't know if I'm the first person to make this comp. Maybe I'm the first person to go in-depth and truly look at the similarities at this point in the year for this comparison. But the 2024 Seattle Mariners are quite similar to the 2015 New York Mets. It's not a perfect comp, but it's a fun one. And there's no such thing as a perfect comp, but this is a good one. The New York Mets, if you recall, they lost the World Series to the Royals. And the first thing, or at least in my mind, the first thing that I think of when I hear 2015 New York Mets is you think of the pitching staff. You think of DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Matt Harvey. You think of those three guys and that amazing pitching staff that they had there for a couple of years. Those three specifically had phenomenal years in 2015. And then you had John Neese and Bartolo Colon as your other starters as well, who didn't have amazing years, but they didn't have awful years. They were fine. But you had those three horses to lead them in the playoffs, if they were to get to the playoffs, in Syndergaard, DeGrom, and Matt Harvey. Grown at home, basically, as well. And then you had, up until this point in the year, a pretty bad offense. You had a team that was highlighted by some big names in the offense that weren't necessarily producing. Their offense was really bad. Their only above-average offensive players until August were Lucas Duda and Curtis Granderson. And honestly, you could say that a decent amount of the guys on the team had underperformed a little bit offensively. Sounds a little familiar. The Mariners have a generational rotation. They have their three horses at the lead right now to lead them to the playoffs in Castillo, Gilbert, and Kirby. And honestly, this pitching staff is deeper. Like Bartolo Colon and John Neese, I would take Bryce Miller over both of them right now. Maybe not Brian Wu with his health, but still, when Brian Wu is pitching well, he's great. So this pitching staff is debatably better than the 2015 Mets, but you have those three guys who've been carrying it all year. The rotation's great. The bullpen is a solid foundation. I should have mentioned with the Mets too. Jurys Familia out of the bullpen was their closer, was a really good option for them that year, and they had some other good arms. They also, again, solid foundational bullpen that could probably use another arm at the deadline. And then like the Mariners, the lineup up until this point in the year has been quite bad. The Mariners have been awful. The lineup has been so bad. But I'm comparing where these teams are at. So on July 31st, 2015, which is the trade deadline, the Mets were 53-50 and two games back of the first place Washington Nationals. They had scored 365 runs that year and given up 371 at that point. That was the lowest run scored of any team in the league and the second lowest runs allowed of any team in the league. Does that sound familiar? Because of the Mariners, it's not quite July 31st, but the 2024 Mariners are 53-51. So they've played one more game than the Mets had at that point, because that season in 2015 started like April 8th, and now we're starting the seasons earlier in March. So 53-50 were the Mets. 53-51 are the Mariners, and they're one game back of the Astros in first place. The Mets were two games back. The Mariners have scored 390 runs this season and given up 381. That is the third lowest runs scored in the league and the second lowest runs allowed in the league. Remarkably similar spots for both of these teams. The Mets have the lowest scoring offense, the Mariners have the third lowest, and they both have the second lowest runs allowed by their pitchers in all of baseball. Very similar spots these teams are in. The only difference is the Mariners have six more games left this month until the trade deadline to shift those numbers around, but that doesn't really change my point, and I don't think they're going to dramatically shift their standing in six games, really. But they could prove me wrong. They had before. So what did the Mets do at the deadline? That is a team that has gone into the deadline recognizing, hey, we think we've built a decent offense here that has been underperforming. We have a guy in Michael Conforto who's ready to make his debut for this team and maybe spark the offense. But even that might not be enough. We have this great pitching staff. We have a really stable, one of the best closers in baseball. And again, you have three guys anchoring the front of your rotation who has been, it's been one of the best, if not the best staff in baseball. I mean, the Cardinals staff went crazy that year, but one of the best staffs in baseball. So what do you do at the deadline if you're the Mets? A couple days before the deadline, I think it was the 28th or 29th, they acquired Tyler Clippard from the A's to shore up their bullpen, and he was pretty good for them down the stretch in the playoffs that year. And their big deadline day acquisition on July 31st, 2015, if you recall, they acquired one of the best bats available at the time and turned out to be the best deadline acquisition that year, bat-wise. It was Detroit Tiger, Yoenis Cespedes. And when I went back to look at this trade, I completely forgot that Yoenis Cespedes was on the Tigers. Looking back, I was astounded because I just completely forgot he was on the Tigers. Like, if you told me who traded him away to the Mets, I would have said the Red Sox, because I remember he went to the Red Sox in the John Lester deal from the A's. Just absolutely forgot that the Red Sox traded him to Detroit for Rick Porcello. Maybe I blocked it out of my memory. I just straight up forgot. But it was Detroit Tiger, Yoenis Cespedes, who that season was one of the best deadline bats available, and he was having a great year. He was continuing Yoenis Cespedes things and playing a good corner outfield. He had an 829 at the deadline. That's a 125 OPS plus in this offensive environment of 2014. He had 18 home runs at that point, 61 RBIs, 293 batting average, 506 slug. Like he was having a good year. And what happened with the Mets that year? They went on an absolute heater in August. They came alive. Their offense after the deadline was scorching, and it was led by Yoenis Cespedes. So Yoenis Cespedes gets traded to the Mets, and he improves upon his already good numbers in 2015. So he goes to the Mets. He plays 57 games for the Mets. He hit 17 home runs in those 57 games with 44 RBIs. He slashed 287, 337, 604 for a 942 OPS and a 155 OPS plus. And I believe, I'll look at the WRC plus in a second. But good Lord. 604. Slugging is crazy. He hit 18 home runs in 102 games on the Tigers and then went to the Mets, played half as many games, and hit 17 home runs. He was their talisman on offense at the second half of the year. And all of a sudden, it's not just him. A lot of their currently existing hitters on the team came alive after a very weak April to July. So I mentioned Curtis Granderson and Lucas Duda were their only positive hitters before the deadline. Curtis Granderson had a 122 WRC plus before the deadline, and Lucas Duda had a 124. And then after the deadline, Curtis Granderson had a 147, and Lucas Duda had a 160. And slightly less games played for Lucas Duda, but their offensive output improved. And then guys, like I said, who kind of had underwhelming years up to that point, started to hit better. Guys like Wilmer Flores, Juan Lugares, Daniel Murphy, Ruben Tejada, all those guys had great August, September, and early Octobers at the plate after a very underwhelming April through July. And newly called up prospect Michael Conforto, like I mentioned, burst onto the scene, hit the ground running, and was a great hitter for them as well. But Cespedes was the best and their most valuable player down the stretch after they acquired him. Yeah, 156 WRC plus for them and 2.6 F4 from August 1st on. They went 20-8 in August. 20-8 and 17-14 in September, October to cruise to the division win at 90-72. So even after that scorching August and September, they end up with 90 wins. Sounds like some very similar Seattle Mariners teams, and maybe this year's potentially, we'll see. And then Clippard again. Their bullpen acquisition at the deadline was a solid contributor. Their bullpen for them, I should just add that. So their two acquisitions at the deadline were both solid for them, I think. Whereas you tell their Clipper, a 32 and a third innings, 3.06 ERA for them. Yeah, 125 ERA plus. That's solid out of the pen for them. That helped their bullpen. And they didn't need a big closer. Again, Jewish Familia had a phenomenal year that year. And the Mets, if you recall, they beat the Dodgers in the NLDS. They steamrolled the Cubs in the CS and swept them. And then lost to the Royals 4-1 in the World Series. But in July, you're looking at this team who is battling the Nationals for a few games over 500 and control of the NL East, which is, it's hard to imagine the NL East has a really weak division, but it was a decade ago. And then they acquire Yoenis Cespedes and go on an absolute tear. And I think it's not like there's a direct correlation between getting Yoenis Cespedes and the entire offense kind of coming alive. But I don't think there's not a correlation. I mean, I think there's a little bit in that where you see your team acquire one of the best bats at the deadline. A new guy comes into the clubhouse who's hitting really well that year. He starts raking. Everyone around him just gets lifted up. And when you're having a good time at work, I think you're going to play better. And I think that's part of a good deadline acquisition. But acquiring a helpful bullpen arm and one of the best bats at the 2024 deadline should be the goal for the Seattle Mariners. This Mets team is probably the absolute ceiling and like 99th percentile outcome here is what happened to this Mets team. Like it was the absolute ceiling of probably what could have happened. Getting Cespedes and everyone else getting on fire. But who's to say something like this can't happen? Like, it's baseball, man. It's a ridiculous sport. The team goes out and acquires a Luis Robert, a Vlad Jr., a Brent Rooker, whatever, and it just galvanizes the squad. And they hit the ground running in Seattle, which is not something we've seen before, really. But it galvanizes the squad, and everyone starts hitting better. I mean, this Mets team is exactly what needs to happen with the Mariners. They need to both acquire and be fairly aggressive with getting a bat or two or three, screw it, at the deadline. And then they just kind of need everyone else in-house to start picking up the slack. And unfortunately, talk about in a second, J.P. Crawford and Julio were starting to do that a little bit. And they're both hurt now, which is unfortunate. But it's almost like they need a move for a bat, because obviously their offense is really stinky, but also just to light a fire under everyone to play better. Like, hey, we're buying in, we're bringing in people to play better. We need you guys to play better as well. I think it's part of what needs to happen here. But it's a good representation. As bleak as things look right now, baseball is a stupid, stupid sport, and anything could happen. It's a ridiculous sport. Now, what also happened, I should mention, the context of the division for the 2015 New York Mets. The Nationals did not have a good August and September and ended up going 83-79. And I think they had a pretty awful August and a very mediocre September. And they lost the East by 7 games. And then the next best team in that division was the Marlins, who went 71-91. The East was really bad. And it's not like the AL West is great, but the Mariners probably have better competitors stacked up against them than the Astros and the Rangers. I guess the Rangers would be similar to the Nationals, and the Astros, I think, are just better. Better competition than what the Mets face. So there's that, too. If the Mariners end up winning 90 games this year, like these Mets did, I don't think they're going to win the West by 7 games unless something crazy happens. I feel like the Astros are winning high 80s, low 90s games this year. It just looks like it. And the Rangers have been playing better. So we'll see. But that was a fun little comp. When I looked at those numbers, I was very surprised at how similar the runs scored and records and games back in the division they were at this point in the year. And so that's what just needs to happen. The Mariners need to acquire Yoenis Cespedes, and then all will be well. I think that should be the plan. I think if you just put Yoenis Cespedes on your team, they'll do better. I think that's the key here. But that was my New York Mets Seattle Mariners comp. I really hope that happens. That'd be great. And a trip to the World Series, why not? Even if they lost, that would be sweet. So we'll take it. But now we'll get into the current state of the actual 2024 Seattle Mariners. And it's not good. It's not good at all. Julio jumped into the wall the other day, hurt his ankle. Everyone on the internet died for a second because it looked real bad. Like, it looked like it could have been a ankle shattering type situation, but thankfully it was just like a sprain. At least that's how it's been communicated, but they put him on the 10-day IL after leaving it for like 24 hours. And I guess this is probably just to be safe, and you don't want to end up having the situation that they kind of did with Jorge Polanco earlier in the year, where he had the hamstring injury and ended up being out for a long time. They didn't put him on the IL, so I think it was probably best to do that, which that blows. He was really hitting well. Him and Robles had been the best hitters on this team the past couple weeks, so that is a big blow for him and for the offense leading into the trade deadline. And J.P. Crawford fractured his finger and is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. That sucks. He was just starting, I feel like, to turn a corner. The at-bats felt like they were getting better, and that's like his bread and butter, is just kind of grinding out at-bats. And they don't really... Josh Rojas does that, But they don't really have anyone else who does that on this team. That was a glaring hole in the team that JP fills. Josh Rojas is pretty decent at it, but not as good as JP. That sucks. That's a blow. That's a big position to fill, too. Shortstop. And right now, they're just going to have Dylan Moore fill it. And as much as I like Dylan Moore, he should not be a starter on a contending team. He should be a utility man. And his defense at shortstop is not great. And I'm not expecting him to be great. He's a utility man who can play shortstop. I don't want him to be the everyday shortstop, but it's just going to have to be like that for now, which is unfortunate. They called up Leo Rivas. I don't know if he's supposed to be better defensively than Dylan Moore at shortstop. I doubt he's much of a factor at the plate, but I'm sure we'll see him plenty just filling in defensively. And if he's a good defender, it might be worth playing him more than Dylan Moore, to be quite honest. If Dylan Moore's not going to hit very well. So there's that. And then the real big news before those injuries happened, Ty France. They finally pushed the button on Ty France. They put him on outright waivers, and then every Mariners fan had to look up what that meant. Thankfully, Ryan Divish explained it very well, but it's basically just a team can claim him if they want. He's still on the active roster. They could keep him on the active roster after putting him through waivers. It's basically just asking straight up before you DFA and cut a guy, does anyone want him? Does anyone want him and his like $6.5 million salary? No one did. So he was back with the team, and then they DFA'd him. And since he has, I think, 5+ years of service, he can deny a minor league option. So right now he is DFA'd, so they can either trade him. I guess they could try to option him to Tacoma if he accepts it. I doubt he would. And the most realistic scenario here, if they don't find a trade for him, which I don't know if they will, is they just release him. They release him. They cover his $6 million salary for the rest of this season because he was in arbitration. And then a team could sign him for the minimum. And that's probably what any team who wanted him when he got put on outright waivers was probably thinking. There's probably not that many teams that want him right now. And you don't want to pick up that much salary for a player you don't think is probably that great. You just wait for the Mariners to release him into free agency officially, and then you can sign him for the minimum while he's still getting paid by the Mariners. So there's that. That is probably what's going to happen. It'd be real interesting if the Astros signed him. They could use a first baseman. I don't know if they want to employ a man like Ty France, but you know, maybe the Astros could figure him out. But that was the real big news before those injuries. That was huge. I mean, Ty France has been a staple of this team for 4 years now. He was probably the biggest headline acquisition of that Padres trade. The infamous Austin Nola, Dan Altavia, Austin Adams, off the top of my head. That was that trade for Taylor Trammell, Andres Munoz, Ty France. Oh, there was one other guy. Oh, that's gonna haunt me. I'm looking it up right now. I'm not even pausing the episode. Who else was it? You're probably screaming it at me. I just can't remember. Oh my God, tell me. Google AI is the worst. Luis Torrens. That's who it was. Ping pong champion Luis Torrens. How did I forget? Come on. But then now Munoz is the last guy on the team from that trade. But I mean, Ty France, it's so unfortunate that it didn't work out. He just looked like a really nice option at first base. He looked like kind of a different type of first baseman. He wasn't going to offer a ton of power, but he had some really good years there for these Mariners. And it sucks that he sucked the past two seasons. He was just not good enough. 2020, it was great. And then full seasons, 2021 and 2022, it was 125, 128 OPS plus. Again, just not a whole lot of power, but great hit tool. He hit 291 in 2021, and then his OPS has just fallen since then. From 2021 on, it was 813, 774, 703, and 662 this year. And the hit by pitches always inflated his on base, but that was part of his skill. But those are volatile, even even doesn't matter how good he is at getting hit by pitches. He was striking out more this year. It sucks because it just looks, it looks like a guy, and I talked about it a lot, about his redemption. I was buying in this year because I was very openly buying in because he was going to driveline, and just me, I'm not a expert in fixing a player, but just looking at like his Baseball Savant for a while, I talked about it on the pod. I think there were some easy fixes. He was missing a lot of pitches in the middle of the plate. Felt like there was just a couple tweaks to be made, and there was still a really nice hitter in there. So I was buying in. He went to driveline. We saw what it did with JP, and I feel like driveline could have just unlocked those couple tweaks to, because it wasn't all forsaken last year. It was just he wasn't good, but there were clear signs that things could be tweaked and it could be better. And it clearly just didn't work out, which sucks, which really sucks. And he's going to be off the team now. I think Tyler Locklear is going to basically be the full-time first baseman until further notice. And that's that. Just sucks with Ty France. He was really, seemed like a very nice fella. And one of the faces of a team that broke the drought. And it just stinks where it headed with him. He was always a pretty limited player to begin with. But if he kept up 120s OPS plus numbers, like with a good hit tool, his defense declined too. It just, he was always limited. If the hitting wasn't going to be there, he doesn't offer anything else. He was already limited with lack of power. If he wasn't going to hit for a good average and get on base, that was basically it for him being a Major League Baseball player on a contending team, because he's not fast and he's not elite defensively, which if you're not going to be good at the plate at first base, you need to be damn elite to stick over there. But he's just not either of those things. And if you're not going to hit, I think this is the right move for the team. And we'll see. We'll see if they do end up finding a trade for him. I doubt it. The salary is just too much for a not very good player when a team could just wait for him to elect free agency and sign him, like I talked about. So just sucks. Just sucks to see Ty France out of here, but I hope Tyler Locklear can at least be an average major league hitter and play better defense than Ty France. So we'll see. We'll see if he can do that. But right now, I mean, the vibes couldn't be worse with this team right now. It is, it's awful. Losing 6 of 7 against the Angels within like a span of 2 weeks is not ideal. It's that's really bad. The lineup on Wednesday was insane. On Tuesday and Wednesday, I got Wednesday's up. It was Josh Rojas, Victor Robles, and this is going 1 through 9. Josh Rojas, Victor Robles, Kyle Raleigh, Jorge Polanco, Mitch Haniger, Jason Vossler at DH, Tyler Locklear, Luke Rayleigh, and Dylan Moore at shortstop. Oh, PU, man. That is one of the worst lineups the Mariners have put out in a long time. And that's really saying something. I tweeted something out, but it was like, if you told me in March that that was a real Mariners lineup on July 24th, I'd assume things have gone horribly wrong. But no. When I tweeted that, they were in first place. And I was like, they're in first. Hasn't gone horribly wrong. But as Mariner Muse pointed out in the mentions of that tweet, they pointed out that things have somehow gone horribly wrong and they're in first place on July 23rd. And that's true. I agree with that. Things have both gone horribly wrong for this team, and they're one game out of first in late July. So could be worse, but the vibes are awful. They're so bad right now. But despite the really poor play on the field and poor vibes, the deadline plan should be they shouldn't have changed in the past couple weeks. Maybe slightly with the JP news, but really it shouldn't have, like, grand scale, it should not have changed. The offense is still bad. The pitching's still good. Those two things have not changed. They should be even more incentivized to buy now with the injury troubles. There's a lot of cowards on the internet saying that they should sell, which a lot of people have said. I've responded to those tweets and been like, why would they do that and how would they do that, which I agree. Selling quite literally makes zero sense at all, unless you're selling Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller. Unless you sell the whole pitching staff, there's nothing to sell. It's nonsense. It's hogwash, even, I'll say it. Selling makes no sense. And they're a game out of first. Like, again, as I said it when I was talking about the Mets. As bad as the vibes are sometimes, and they're awful right now with this team, they're a game out of first. They were a random 7-game win streak away from being 2 games up in the division again or something random like that. Like, we've seen this team do that before with inferior offenses. It can happen. Like, you're too close. You're too close to the division. This is the best opportunity that this team has had to win the division in I don't know how long. They have to buy. They have to be aggressive buyers. And it's, again, there's every position could be feasibly upgraded. It's not like they're pigeonholed into buying one position. They could upgrade every single offensive position. They won't upgrade center field when Julio's healthy. They might get a center fielder, but they might not play him in center field. And they won't upgrade catcher. And I said last week, I think they won't upgrade shortstop. I don't know if they'll upgrade it, but they might look for a little stopgap trade while JP's out for 4 to 6 weeks. They could do that. So, this team hasn't really earned the right for optimism this season, nor in franchise history. But I'll be the shred of light in the darkness right now. It's like, things could get better. They're not out. They have 1 game back of the Astros right now, despite how poor they're playing, the division is so right there. It is attainable. The pitching staff is elite. And it'll take 2 good weeks of baseball to put this team back on track in first place. But the offense right now is especially ugly with JP and Julio out. It wasn't good with those two in it. And it's not good now. So, I did also want to share, I was looking, they haven't scored very many runs recently, and I looked into the lowest scoring months in Mariners history on Stathead, and they're making a run for it this July. I think that like 11 run victory against the Angels might get them out of the slop here. And I'm going to update this when the month ends and see where they end up. But right now, it would be the 4th lowest scoring month in team history. So they have 6 games left. So that's plenty to get out of here. But all of the 4 months around July 2024 all have a reason to be very low scoring. So I'm just going to read it off. April 1995, they scored 24 runs. That was a strike year. The strike started April 25th, or the season started April 25th after the 94 strike. So they played, 5 games in April? So 24 runs. Second place lowest scoring is June 1981. They played 37 games. There was a strike that season. Play halted on June 12th. So June 1981, play halted on June 12th. They scored 37 runs. The next one on the list is July 2020. The season began July 23rd. They scored 41 runs in July that month, but started on the 23rd. Then July 2024 comes up with 58 runs with 6 games left. And then right behind it with 70 runs scored is April 1981. The season started on April 8th that year. So that would be kind of a short month. They scored 70 runs. So I'm going to check in at the end of the month to see where they're at in franchise history run scoring. And I just wanted to say that because it was funny. I saw that nestled in between all those. And as I looked at them, I was like, something is not right here. I saw 2020. I saw 1995, 1981. Yeah, it's strikes and short seasons where they have the lowest scoring months. So 6 games left to get out of to score, like, I don't know, 13 more runs. That could be a lot to ask for this baseball team. But next week, I will check back in and see where they ended up. So luckily, I'm here to save the day for this baseball team. This is the last pod before the trade deadline. I'm going to fix the Mariners. All you got to do is start cheating. I said it last week, cork the bats, give the players steroids, humidor the baseballs, whatever you got to do. Or wouldn't that make them less? Dry out the baseballs, right? Drying them out, right? Doesn't that make them fly farther? Am I crazy? Fix the baseballs at home. It wouldn't be fishy at all if in August the Mariners' OPS at home was like 200 points higher than on the road. Nobody would look into that at all. I'm sure of it. But besides cheating, here's what you got to do. You trade for Jose Caballero and Jesse Winker. You bring the boys back. You bring the band back together. Jose Caballero can play shortstop, and Jesse Winker will fill in at DH when Mitch Garver is catching or against right-handed pitching. Bam. Those are the... No, I'm just kidding. Throw in Mark Canna. You know, put a bow on the deadline. Mark Canna, Jose Caballero, and Jesse Winker. How mad would the fans be if that was their deadline? I would... I don't think I would be irate, but I wouldn't be pleased. I have no clue what they're going to do. I still don't. I have no clue what most teams are going to do. Like, obviously, I think they will trade for offense. It's just, will Jerry trade for his typical, like, utility kind of offensive bat? Or, like, Mark Canna. As good as Mark Canna might be against left-handed pitching, that can't be the whole deadline move. But it could be. It could be. Jerry might be calling teams right now looking for trades, and they might be asking for a king's ransom for Luis Robert or Vladdy, and he might just not want to do it. And that's fair, but I also think you should just take a big swing right now. I'm of that mindset. Finding a replacement shortstop is now a potential new target, which sucks. Although, like, they may just end up sticking with Dylan Moore, which would be suboptimal. I may have been slightly kidding about Caballero, but if they're trading with the Rays already for an Isaac Paredes or a Yandy Diaz, either of them I would welcome with open arms on the Seattle Mariners, Yandy especially. That's a big if, but if they are trading with the Rays for a bigger bat, might as well throw in Caballero, right? He can play shortstop better than Dylan Moore defensively, and he's faster than Dylan Moore. And I'd like Caballero at shortstop more than Dylan Moore. So that's my kind of kidding, but also not kidding. If they're already trading with the Rays, you should ask for Caballero as a stopgap right now for JP's injury. Like, if they're talking to the White Sox, maybe you throw in Paul DeJong. But, like, Paul DeJong is not particularly good in the field or at the plate. Paul DeJong is just not particularly good. That would not move me. If it was a throw-in with Luis Robert, sure, that would move me a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know where they go. They have all this depth on the farm, but it could be the exact right time to trade a pitcher from the MLB rotation. If there's any time to do it, I think it's right now to get a major league bat and maybe a prospect bat that you'd call up right away. That's their biggest strength right now is pitching, but I think it might be time to trade a Bryce Miller or Brian Wu. And I think Bryce Miller at this point is probably more attractive of a trade piece just given how healthy and somewhat consistent he's been all year. And as much as it'd be tough to see one of those guys go, no one likes when you trade anyone from the team. I've gathered on the internet. If you trade prospects, they'll be like, oh, you traded our future. If you trade Bryce Miller, you'd be like, oh, you traded one of our best pitchers. It's like, no one will be happy with whatever you trade. But I think trading from this great strength is probably something they might have to do. You got to make sacrifices. And I think they just need to bring the offense and the pitching a little bit closer together. The pitching can get marginally worse because it's always going to be good at home. They have that advantage. Their pitching talent can get a little bit worse because it's always going to be solid at home. And if you keep those top three guys, it's going to be a good rotation no matter what you have at 4 and 5. That's a simple fact. If you keep George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, and Luis Castillo, it doesn't matter who you're pitching at 4 and 5. That's a damn good rotation, and especially it wouldn't matter if you made the playoffs who your 4 and 5 are. So it could be time. And obviously I want to keep Logan Gilbert and Kirby and Castillo all together. But what could Logan Gilbert feasibly fetch you on the trade market right now? I'm not averse to trading Logan Gilbert. I think they should probably go with Wu or Miller first for a major league bat. But, like, what would the Orioles, let's say, give up for Logan Gilbert? Would they give up Heston Kjerstad, Ryan Mountcastle, or Kobe Mayo and Heston Kjerstad? You know, like, what would the Blue Jays want? No, I don't think so. The Blue Jays might more want Bryce Miller. I'm really a Logan Gilbert. I don't. Logan Gilbert could get you a lot. Would the Rays trade for Logan Gilbert? I don't think so either. I don't know. I just don't know. You have Emerson Hancock in AAA. You have Logan Evans in AA, probably close to Major League ready, at least as a five for a month or two. I feel like Emerson Hancock is just going to be like a toss into a trade as a little nice to have for a trading team. I don't think he's a headliner, but I don't know. It might be time to trade from this pitching staff. It's almost an embarrassment of riches that you're sitting on, that it genuinely doesn't matter how good they are if the offense can't score runs. So I don't know. I think I'm of the mind, if you keep your top three and you trade from Wu, Miller, Hancock for a proven major league bat, which they're not very good at acquiring, I think that would be a good deadline. I think that's a swing they need to take, is mortgage a little bit of their rotation and their young pitching for a solid bat. And again, the Orioles are probably an attractive candidate for that. But we'll see. We'll see what they do. We'll just see what they do. I'm going to end it there. I'm tired of talking, but it's a huge week. I think I said this is the biggest month in Jerry DePoto's tenure. I think this is the biggest and most important week that Jerry DePoto, Justin Hollander, John motherfucking Stanton, and Scott Servais and his coaching staff have had as long as they've been with this team. This is a week that not only they need to beat the White Sox this weekend, if they lose the series of the White Sox, I'm not a big fire the coach guy, but I think if they lose the series in Chicago to the White Sox this weekend, I would be open to firing him. That is a fireable offense. Doesn't matter if it really doesn't have any impact on the team. That's a fireable offense, man. You can't get swept by the Angels and then lose a series to the White Sox. That is deplorable if that happens. And then they play the Red Sox. They have a bunch of Sox this week until the trade deadline. So let's hope they conquer the Sox and they cut them up like Chris Sale did his jersey, and go into the trade deadline with a little bit of positive momentum, and then trade, baby. We know Jerry's going to make a trade. And if he just trades for Mark Canha, it's going to be an angry podcast on Friday. We'll see what happens. It might be an emotional roller coaster of a week and a podcast next Friday, but we know there will be trades. What trades will there be? We'll see. But with that, I hope you have a good rest of your week personally, and I hope the Mariners do as well. And of course, I'll leave you with a hearty go Victor Robles led Seattle Mariners.